Welcome to the Legally Different podcast, where together we will create the kind of success that doesn't just look good on the outside, but feels damn good on the inside too. If you're ready to find, create, or evolve your soul-aligned career, then this podcast is for you. I'm Lauren Kay, a consultant lawyer, human design guide, and a career strategist and alchemist. With a 12-year legal career under my belt, 7 years of which have been working differently on my own terms and experimenting with fulfilling ways of working, yes, even in the legal space, I'm here to empower and equip you to embrace your own legally different path, simply by being you and leveraging what makes you unique. We are all legally different by design. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to our careers, businesses, and beyond. So these conversations will inspire and support you to understand your own unique blueprint for success. Thanks so much for being here. Now let's dive in. Welcome to the Legally Different podcast. And today I'm joined by Patrick Patino, the hoodie and backward hat wearing attorney, who's the creator of the Newfangled Lawyer, which amongst other things is a podcast which aims to humanize the lawyer experience, which in my opinion is a very cool movement and mission. So welcome, Patrick.
Thank you so much for having me, Lauren. I'm super pumped to be here to have this conversation today. I'm sure we'll talk about all kinds of things.
We won't stick to one topic.
I'm positive of that. I started the, I guess, this movement or this conversation, right? This dialogue about what does it mean to be a human that just so happens to also be a lawyer, either practicing or not. Because I think narrative in the oral tradition of storytelling is so important for human history. We learn a lot through sharing, you know, this is what I have done, this is what I'm doing now, and this is what I plan to do. And it really resonates with people and allows us to connect, which is, you know, in true connection. I think we have a lot of, in today's day and age, false connection. And we feel like we know people, but we don't really. And what we share a lot of times is only just one part, only one part of the narrative. And we don't want to be exposed. We don't want to be criticized. We don't want to be vulnerable. Because particularly in the legal profession, there's this paranoia that someone's going to use that against you. And that no one's to be trusted. You can't trust anyone to do what they say to help you out or, you know, support you. And so it really creates these like isolating type behavior where you feel like you're on an island. So that's really what I'm here to do, is just kind of open it up so people can see that there's such a variety, and people are thinking about these trials and tribulations, these struggles, these stressors, you know, these anxieties, these joys, these hopes, these happinesses as well. It's just not you. Because the human struggle is a joint struggle, right? It's not one person, and it doesn't just affect you. So that's, you know, that's why I'm here, I guess. Just because I have a purpose. That's, I guess, what it is.
Yeah, love that. There's so many different things I could dig into. But I guess I'm curious to know, so the word newfangled lawyer, what would you say that means? Like, what's your definition of it?
What I think that means is practicing in a way that is true to yourself. Not through the lens of anyone else, and what you think is the normative standard, what is prescriptive. In the law, where there's a lot of shoulds and musts and requirements, and I was just actually having this conversation with my 9-year-old son about there's a difference between like a guideline and recommendation and like a requirement and a mandate. Mm-hmm. And I think a newfangled lawyer appreciates those nuances. Like some things are required, something there are a mandate, but there are plenty of things that are just recommendations. There's plenty of, there's a lot more breadth. There's a lot more space. There's a lot more agency that people have as lawyers to, you know, utilize self-expression, being true to their own voice, being true to, you know, how they work, mm-hmm. how they vibrate, how they, you know, resonate with work and relationships. And it's not going to look the same. Mm-hmm. And it can't, and it shouldn't. How boring. If we yeah. all looked the same, that's so boring.
Absolutely. Love so much of that. And I can definitely see some similarities behind the mission of the newfangled lawyer and Legally Different. And I also love that you taught your son that. Like, you know, he's going to be using the stuff that the things that aren't mandates and only guidelines back around at you. Like, I love that you're sort of instilling that level of freedom in him as well. But yeah, that's so cool.
I mean, he's already kind of like a lawyer. So, I mean, the way in which he like looks at the world is very much so like a traditional lawyer. He rationalizes. He seeks facts. Mm. He's really good. He was basically like deposing my wife yesterday. He's super good and like to lull you into a false sense of security, and then he strikes. Like,
wow.
Yeah, he's super good. So it allows me kind of to take some of these tenets that I'm out here, I guess, sharing with adults and be like, oh gosh, this applies to anyone, to mm-hmm. many situations. This isn't just kind of a challenge to how lawyers should live, or I guess an openness. It's really had an openness to everything. It's really shifted the way in which I am a husband and I parent, and friendships and my relationship to myself. It's all been informed through kind of this newfangled way of being and thought process.
Mm-hmm. Love that. And was there like a version of Patrick who wasn't a newfangled lawyer? Like, I'm curious to know where this came from. Like, have you always felt different, whatever that is? Have you always felt like a newfangled lawyer and you've always been like this maverick? Or have you felt like in a box at points, which has then led you to kind of go, I need to do my own thing? Yeah, I'd love to, like, I suppose we're digging back into like your earlier lawyer days. What did they look like, and where did the desire to be on be the newfangled lawyer create this platform come from?
I mean, as part of any good origin story, you need to like go back further. And so it's like I went to a Catholic college preparatory high school, and I had I had plenty of good teachers, but one in particular, he was my like English writing teacher, and I could take like a rubric, right, of like, this is what the paper needs to be about, and I would just like spin it on its head, and he just totally fully embraced that. And it was like, okay, how can I apply this kind of repeat? So it's like, even going to college, I first was like, well, what do people do? Right. And so I'm like, well, people get business degrees. I didn't, but that wasn't really me. Right. Like, even at that time, I was kind of just going with, well, what do other people do? Not what do I want to do? And so I started out like on a path of like, yeah, I'm going to be like a finance major, be like a finance bro, I guess. I was horrible at it and I didn't like it. It was miserable. And so I switched my major to creative writing, right? And I wrote like poetry and short stories. And it was a wonderful, wonderful change. And, you know, there's a cyclical nature to this, where this is on repeat. Like I both have like these enlightened moments of I guess, accepting myself as like a creative, not fitting inside a rubric, fitting outside the rubric, breaking the rubric, reusing the rubric in my own way. And so this pattern just continues over and over again, where I go, okay, I'm going to go do my own thing. It feels great. I have success. Not I don't think traditional success, right? And so even becoming a lawyer, honestly, I graduated with a creative writing degree, and was like, okay, how do you make money? And so it was like, well, lawyers make money. I like to read and write, and I like helping people. It was that simple. I didn't like think about it too much. I didn't really know what being a lawyer was. I had no idea. And still I don't sometimes know exactly what lawyers do. So yeah, I mean, did I reach a certain point where kind of in this cyclical nature that I've had my whole life, this isn't new. Is that finally I just about 2 years ago hit a point of this isn't sustainable. I can't continue to go through these cycles of not myself, myself, not myself, myself on repeat. And it's challenging. It's challenging to, I'm a Pisces. You're going to like this. You're going to like this. So Pisces both swim with the current and swim against it. It's the constant terror that I go through. Conformity and not. Conformity and not. And so I reached a point where I was just doing what I love to do, wordsmithing. So I just like sat down one day and I was like, I have loved being on podcasts. I'm going to like do it myself. It's so fun. This is like such a creative outlet. I feel alive. I feel like myself. And I just started wordsmithing and landed on Newfangled. And it just really encapsulates kind of it's like a house for me, right? And as I've started to build this house and fill it with artifacts and art and design, you know, kind of in a metaphorical sense, it's taken on kind of a life of its own. It's an escape for me. It's a place I can go to when kind of traditional lawyering becomes too much. And what I have found is then it's just another form of escape. It's not an integration. So that's where I'm at now is how do I integrate Newfangled into everything that I do? Where it's not an escape, it's just where I exist in every moment of every day. And that's that's a change for me because I'm a dreamer. You know, I'm an introvert. I like retreating to myself. And the issue, the dark side of that is rumination or passivity or inaction. And you can fall into a space where that's not very practical, right? It's like I said, it's an escape. It's a trap door. And we all need some time away, I think. We all need some things that are healthy distractions. Attorneys are really good at taking unhealthy risk and having unhealthy distractions. So yeah, it's just kind of was an organic birth out of wanting my life to look and feel the way in which I wanted in a sustainable way, where I didn't have to feel like I continually going through these cycles of me, not me, me, not me. And just be me. And sometimes, you know, there will be kind of high energy and not high energy. And we've talked about this before, you and I. That really resonated with me because I will go through kind of these periods of high, I will say, like, creative output. Like, I can write a ton. I'm just like my brain's on fire. And in the legal profession, there's, you know, the creative outlets, you're like, wow, I really found out a new way to, like, improve my intake process, which is great, which is, like, great. But for me, it has lacked kind of, like, recently that spark. It doesn't feed my soul to be like, wow, I really made my intake process more efficient. Like, that's great from a business owner standpoint. But it doesn't do it. So yeah, that's kind of where then, like, feeding that part of my soul, I just leaned into it. I didn't fight it. I didn't feel bad. Like, I felt so long that like, going and doing these things I actually enjoyed, like, that I wanted to try, like pottery. I was like, I've always wanted to try wheel pottery. And finally, I just did it. It was like me and a bunch of retirees. It was amazing. It was amazing. And so, like,
amazing,
you know, and you just lose yourself in it.
Yeah.
And definitely. I was like, how do I find, I need more of this, more of just sitting and being and making. So yeah, so that's kind of newfangled has kind of, I don't know what to do with it, right? It's like this beautiful blob, and that's okay. There's a lot of
more than a blob. It's amazing. You've got an astronaut on your website. You've got an astronaut, and you're inspiring people with the conversations you're having. Yeah.
See, but that's, but
yeah,
that's
my, I hear
own,
you.
That's,
yeah,
your own self perception, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a lot of pressure, right? There's a lot of pressure to take a creative outlet, particularly in today's day and age. Most people are taking creative outlets and figuring out how to make a bunch of money, monetize it. And people keep asking me, like, oh, what's your, like, game plan? I'm like, I don't have one. Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to have fun. Like, I'm just trying to provide value to everyone. Like, that's the mission. And if at some point it's what I do for a living, great. I mean, that'd be fantastic. But I'm not trying to put pressure on it. Because this is another thing I have had a tendency to do in the past, is I put so much pressure on it, then it just, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah, I've noticed, like, that with Legally Different. It's like, you've got to let it breathe. And sometimes it has its own timelines, but it's like calling yourself out when you're too much in that introverted stage. Like you mentioned earlier, I totally resonated with that. Like, there's parts of you that have got to get to action with certain things, but it's like, I don't think we let things breathe enough and have enough space. Mm. Yeah, everyone's just sort of quick to monetize and... But yeah, thanks for sharing so much of that. Like, I think a lot of people will resonate with some of those tussles around, who am I? What part of myself am I bringing to work, my legal practice? And, like, yeah, it sounds like you're on a journey of, like, integration, like the newfangled lawyer really being fully integrated. And I can definitely resonate with that on my own Legally Different path. And it's really interesting, a few things you said. I wasn't going to chat about your human design chart so early on, but I just can't help myself. You, looking at your human design chart, you are very, very creative. I mean, you know that anyway. You have two particular gifts, leaning into creativity, but you're also very logical. You have that balance. And I can see why potentially that's a bit of a tussle within you. Like, you're creative, but you also want to be practical. And then something else really cool in your chart, which I didn't necessarily plan to talk about, but, like, some of the themes you were talking about there, like One of your gifts is like the gift of abundance of spirit, which is a bit of a strange name, but it means like you're here to, you can feel good with like $5 in your pocket or 5 million. And that's like part of your path. You're here to show like life is beautiful and amazing no matter what. And there's so many things we can be grateful for, but you actually have a lot of monetary gifts, like gifts about being good at managing resources, being here for money, and things like that. So that's really interesting, those dynamics.
It's constant tension.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I'm trying, I've really been trying to work on getting out of like that dualistic type thinking. Like you can either be creative or logical, right? You can either care about money or don't care about money. And you know, just having it be more whole, right? Mm-hmm. And one doesn't have to necessarily negate the other. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be so black and white. I like this abundance of spirit.
And part of your mission is actually to ignite that in others and kind of show that to others as well, which exactly is what Newfangled Lawyers does. Yeah.
Yeah, you build other people up.
Yeah.
Like yeah. I'm telling people all the time, like other attorneys, I'm like, you're a badass. Like, what? Look how cool what you're doing. Like, and I don't mean that in like I'm being disingenuous. I believe that to be true, and spreading that. Not a lot of legal professionals are told like this thing you're doing on the fringes is so like brave. It's so trailblazing. It takes a lot of renegade energy to go do it. Abundance of spirit. I like that. I'm going to start saying that. How are you today? Well, I have an abundance of spirit. And I never thought, and it's one of those things like your perception, self-perception. Like, I didn't necessarily see myself that way until really recently. And I told my wife, I said, like, maybe I'm kind of a woo person. Like, I didn't ever think of myself that way, but I've really been embracing that too. Like, as the hype man, like, maybe I'm just really good at hyping people up.
Yeah.
And I'm not the person to carry something through. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I just am like, I light the match, but I'm not carrying that torch all the way to the final destination. And I used to think that was a failure. Like, gosh, some of these other people can run marathons. I'm just really good at like catching the thing on fire and then just like sitting down and taking a nap.
Yeah.
Like, but someone's got to do it. Someone's got to start that
exactly.
First fire.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Do you know what? I've had a similar realization. It was a huge epiphany in my journey. I think like all ideas I've had, for example, I've just assumed, well, you have to carry them out. You have to see it through. You have to be the one who brings this to life. But you can actually be the person on the outside, being the cheerleader, the coach or whatever, helping others do the doing. And actually with your type in human design as a manifester, which we'll get more into, you're actually the starter, the initiator. You're not meant to do the doing. Your gifts and strengths, which totally is coming through, is starting things, igniting the fire and like letting other people go with it. You're not here to do all the doing. So that's really interesting.
I'm horrible at doing the doing. Like I'm like, my wife will joke, like, you're like, is this project going to get done? And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe. Hopefully. I'll start it. It's going to be, I can get it like 95% of the way there. And you know, and when you look back, like historically, right? Like I think a lot of, you know, who you are is who you are. So it's like, if I look back, like how I was as a kid. Oh yeah. Like I could start a coloring page. I would never finish it. Like, and I could do that. And there's so many other examples of this. And that this is another feeling of other, like a lot of attorneys, a lot of lawyers, a lot of people in the legal profession are doers. They just want to do. They're fulfilled by doing. Right. And that always just seems so foreign to me. Like it's kind of like doing worksheets. like homework. Like that always seemed foreign to me too. And yeah, so it's like one of the things I'm, I guess, like coming to terms with is, can you be a practicing lawyer who's not a doer? Mm-hmm. Is it possible to do substantive legal work day in and day out for an extended period of time when you're not a doer? It's a really, there's no answer. There's no right or wrong, but this just is like a big question I've been contemplating, because it seems like a lot of the creative types are okay with not doing. And they're like, the law is for doing, like being a lawyer's day in and out doing. And there's more nuance there, but yeah. I like this.
Yeah.
I'm not a doer, and that's okay.
Yeah. But maybe the point is you don't force the doing. You stand on the outside and you, like, you're more of a supervisor, or you guide other people doing the doing. Sure. That's an alternative.
That's right.
That's actually right. In my legal consulting role, I kind of stepped into more of a role like that, where I'm less of the doing. Yeah. So that's one small example of where I'd say it's possible. When we think creatively, anything is possible.
that can get you into trouble.
Yeah, true.
Sometimes when you live in a world where anything's possible, yeah, there's opportunities everywhere. You have to be able to prioritize those possibilities. And this is a skill I'm definitely working on, is being like, okay, what is the priority today? What is the priority tomorrow? And it can change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your life changes. Like, the person I am today is very different than the person I was 4 years ago. I mean, in some ways, the way I think about, like, my relationship to myself, to work, to others, has fundamentally changed. Where things that I cared about before, I just, not even a priority. They don't even make the list. Like, I could care less. Like, someone nominated me for, like, this, one of those, like, 40 under 40 awards. I pulled up the application. I'm like, not even do it. I mean, like, I could. I'm sure I'd probably get the thing. Not to brag, but I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's
where I'm at. Would a previous version of you have cared about that? And that's one change you've noticed.
I would have been doing it probably to serve what I thought you should do. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You should be on this committee. You should apply for this award. You know, it looks good. Someone else wants you to do it. And now I've been reframing it as like, well, Patrick, why do you care? Is it something you care about? Is it something that you want to commit your energy to? Not even time, but your energy to.
Yeah.
I've been reframing a lot of things, not in terms of time, but in terms of energy. I have the time to do many things. Like, I think it's a cop-out to say I don't have time. A lot of times, what you're really talking about is you don't have the energy, or you don't want to commit the energy. But we segment things in terms of time. And so I've just been really saying, like, okay, I may have the time, but I don't have the energy.
So what this has
really allowed me to do is, even with my calendar, as a non-doer, one of the ways I've combated that is I've time blocked my calendar. Honestly, for the last several years. Well, I don't even know. A long time. What ended up happening is that I wasn't taking into consideration my energy. It was just like, well, this is on my calendar, right? Like, I blocked off my entire day. I didn't have any space. I didn't have some days of energy. So sometimes I look at my calendar and I just ask myself this simple question: do I have the energy to do that today?
Love that. Mic drop. What a powerful question. Yes. I love those insights. And the other question, do I really care about this? Am I doing it for me? Such powerful questions. And yeah, this is something I talk about a lot. And the energy versus time piece, I think, is really important, because some things, like when you have the energy and the spark for something, it can almost collapse time. You can almost do it in like a next level amount of time, where time just collapses, or whatever. And it's like time becomes irrelevant in those cases. And I think, yeah, asking like, do I have the energy for this is so important, like, because something might just take 10 minutes of time, but it could take like, and this is something like I've definitely journeyed with, it could take 3 hours worth of your energy. And I'm still obviously still using time as a measurable there because it's so ingrained in us, but not everything can be portioned off into time like typically as lawyers we have created it to be.
I mean, to dovetail with that, one of the realizations I've had is you can be positively selfish. Like, we're so used to giving.
Mm-hmm.
Giving, allowing others to control our days, our destinies, our lives. So I was like, well, what if you could be positively selfish? And instead of first asking, like, what does anyone else need? Asking yourself first, like, what do I need? What do I care about? What do I want? I mean, it's okay and acceptable to sometimes think about yourself first. And that is a positive thing. We have so shifted it to like being selfish is so negative. Thinking about yourself is so negative. That then we don't take care of ourselves. We don't even recognize when we're past the point of burnout or we're misaligned. And that's been part of my journey too, of just who am I and am I happy and satisfied with who I am today? No. And that's okay. There's a constant evolution, right? You're iterating every day. You're different. And the person you were yesterday, you got to let go of. And this has taken a lot of work, a lot of energy to get there. And so, yeah, it's like how this has informed, you know, how I practice law, how I interact with, you know, conflicts, how I interact with getting things done. It's made me recently start being like, I'm going to scale back. What is my natural state of just being? Like, just existing? Like, you know, is there a reason why in law school it's really hard for me to get to a 9 a.m. class? Why is that? Why do I work best like in 5-hour sprints? How do I get more of that? In designing, really just designing my life around what is like my natural, like if I would do the hard reset, right? Like back to the factory settings, like hard reset, like what is, you know, like what is that without all of this conditioning and add-ons and software updates? Like, what is just kind of the natural core setting? That's what I'm on the pursuit of next.
Love that. That is such, a powerful question and powerful insights, because that example you gave about getting up at 9 a.m. for law school, like the default setting in society is not to understand who you are and how you optimally operate. It's to know you do everything you can to still get up for 9 a.m. and you make it work regardless of whether it's against your grade, and you follow this path and do it this way rather than going, right, what's best for me? How am I going to be most alive? How am I going to be able to add most value in a way that isn't forgetting who I am? And I love what you shared about being positively selfish. I love that phrase. A word I use is being self-focused. And I say, yeah, that is not a bad thing. We've made selfish to have a bad meaning, but it isn't. It's like so necessary for all the reasons you said.
Just a quickie from me to say thanks so much for being here. A lot of intentional time, energy, and resources go into creating this podcast. And if you'd love to show your support and appreciation, one way you can do so is via the Buy Me a Coffee linked below in the show notes. This podcast is primarily self-funded. I do accept sponsorship from time to time, but that's rarely so, because it has to be the right product or service, something which is truly aligned with my values. So yeah, there's a lot of time, energy, and resources that go into this. And If it feels right for you and you'd love to show your appreciation in that way, you can use the Buy Me a Coffee link. But thank you so much for your continued support and listenership. Now let's get back to the episode. And you mentioned earlier that, yeah, you can see how you've gone through a lot of changes, say, particularly in the last 4 years. And it sounds like to me, you've been quite good at embracing change. And I know it's like quite hard for a lot of humans to accept change, to go through change, particularly lawyers who like routine, certainty, all the things. But it sounds like you've been really open to accepting change, and I think that's really cool. And we change every day, don't we? Like our cells change entirely over the period of 7 years, so we're not the same person in seven, like after 7 years. And it's like, why do we resist change so much? But yeah, what would you say your relationship, obviously they're just my observations, but what would you say your relationship with change is, and has that changed over time?
I thrive in change. I can't do the same thing for very long. I'm not routine oriented. I never have been. Like if someone asks me to do the same task like 5 days in a row, I'm done. Like I've mastered it. I'm bored. It's time to move on. I am constantly restructuring and changing, you know, what I'm doing, how I'm doing it. It can seem waffling. It can seem sporadic. It can seem counterintuitive. It can seem self-defeating. And sometimes it is. Sometimes your greatest gift is your biggest weakness. And because I thrive in change, maybe I sometimes change things before they're ready. And that's what I'm trying to find balance in. But compared to, I would say, a lot of other legal professionals, I absolutely love change. I don't want really any day to look the same. I don't want any week to look the same, any month to look the same, any year to look the same. And once it starts stagnating, it's time for like what I'm right now, what I'm terming like a radical reinvention. It's like an awakening, an enlightenment. These are my favorite periods of time because there's a lot of unknown. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of figuring things out. And that can be messy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm going to go back to like the pottery example. Like that's messy. Like that is so messy. And you can think, like when you're making pottery on a pottery wheel, it's about control. And actually, the more you try to control, the more like wonky your pottery turns out. It's about like returning to your breath. It's been amazing too, like how many things are just about like returning to your breath and being present and letting go. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, for me, my relationship with change has, I think, become deeper over the last particularly year. I'd say I've been reading a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh and about like Zen and like letting go and non-attachment. And one of the examples he uses is like, if you look a picture at yourself as a child, you're like, that's the same person, but it's not. And it's how we get into these binaries, right? You are you, I am me. I am not the tree. It's like, no, we are all the same in some ways, not in terms of a conformity, but we're all connected. It's all interconnected. And so, yeah, I mean, the second you're static, right, you're standing still, you've been locked into a form, you're, I guess, dead. And I didn't want to live that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I didn't want to just be like a statue. And I had kind of turned into that. You kind of, I don't know, solidify, you kind of get mummified in the legal profession because you're like, this is my professional identity. Who are you? I'm a lawyer. What do you do? I lawyer. every day, you lose all these other components of yourself. And the thought of like reintroducing them, you try, but people tell you not to, or you need a permission to do it. Like I was at a law firm and I asked like, hey, I just want to work from home one day a week. It'd be really beneficial to me. Like then I don't have to go through the whole rigmarole of like getting ready in the morning, you know, all this stuff. They were like, well, no. Well, yes, if you give us an entire breakdown of everything you're going to do during that day and then a follow-up of everything you achieve. Whoa. And I was like, well, that's not worth it to me. So like that just creating more work for me. So no, but I think this is, they didn't have any malintent, but attorneys are hedging that change, right? They're like, yeah, you can have that change, but you're going to do this to earn it. And you can see these trade-offs in the legal profession all the time when change is about to happen. I mean, we're seeing it right now with AI and technology and even people having personal brands, right? This is the big thing. Associates having personal brands and posting on social media. It's like that's a form of freedom, but it's also a form of suffocation because they have to be concerned about their big law firm that they're at, creating requirements around that. Mm-hmm. So it's a really, as opposed to just saying like, you go do you on social media, we trust you, you're a professional. If you're going to be out there doing things that are like unethical, right? Doing harm. That's different than just being like, I'm going to have a TikTok about like my love for Taylor Swift. Like, how is that damaging your law firm brand? But there's concern because that's change, right? And so with change comes a tendency to want to control. So yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. Is I'm even right now, how I say is like, yeah, letting go. It's really tough. It's really tough. Even someone who likes change, it can be really difficult because you get really attached to, well, what got me here was who, what I did and who I was before. Mm-hmm. But now it's time to let that go. It's almost like grieving. Like you need like a doula to like help you transition and engage with that suffering and like that despair of this person that is part of my identity needs to go. Like I need to part ways with them. They served their purpose. There's this chef's table on Netflix. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's this wonderful episode. There's a chef who lives in Patagonia. And one part in the show, in this episode, he's talking about this dear friend he had. And the dear friend reached out to him. He's like, hey, you don't really interact with me anymore. And he's like, yeah, we have nothing in common anymore. We did. And now we don't. And that might seem brutal, right? That might seem like brutal, but it's honest. Right? And the same thing can happen with our interaction with ourselves, our relationship to ourselves. There may be a part of us that served us. And now it's time to let that part go. And so that's kind of going back to newfangled. Yes, what got me here was some amount of doing what other people, what I thought other people wanted me to do or would want me to do. Some of it was playing the traditional game, right? Wearing a suit, not having a long beard, not wearing hoodies, not talking how I wanted to talk. Like there was part of me was there, but it was had these other components. And so now it's like very scary, right? To just come to terms with, well, hey, this kind of non-newfangled self is just holding me back. It's comforting. It's comforting, right? It's like that friend who you've kind of outgrown, but it's comforting because you can still talk about like the shenanigans you did 10 years ago, right? There's like some amount of purpose to that. But that person is still 10 years ago. Like they haven't grown, they haven't changed. That can happen with yourself, you know? So that's, yeah. So that's kind of, you know, with change and newfangled and how they come about is newfangled is, you know, at its heart, it's not new, right? It's newfangled. It's like objection. Like when you're looking at it from an objective point of view, what I'm doing is, you know, kind of using my own life and my own profession is this like grand experiment of trying something radically different. And Newfangled kind of has this tongue in cheek. It's like the old guard would look at me, oh, look at that newfangled thing, like a new gadget. And you kind of see it as this disruptive, harmful thing, but at its essence, it's not that at all.
It's here to intentionally disrupt with integrity and heart and, so many other
without ways. Doing harm. I'm not... Change doesn't have to be harmful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be detrimental. There can be loss. There can be grief. But that inherently is not harm.
Mm-hmm.
Pain isn't even necessarily harmful. It's just part of the human condition. Sorrow. Lament. Right? All of these things we have deemed as harmful. And so we don't even engage with them in the law or elsewhere.
True.
Right?
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
Right?
And we almost do anything to avoid those kind of feelings, like rather than, I don't know, facing up to the truth of something and knowing you maybe need to make a change, we grit into, oh no, but I know that will involve feeling sorrow or loss or grief or whatever. But it's like we could do with moving into that a lot more, and it creates room for other things the more we move through those kind of feelings when it's kind of the right time and aligned. And I love how it strikes me that you're so self-aware, like to be even going through this and to be able to articulate what's going on, what you're observing. Yeah, to me, you've got like ninja level skills at self-awareness. And I think self-awareness is like such a cool key tool. And like, I don't doubt that with that level of self-awareness, whatever comes, you're just going to be able to navigate it so well with these like ninja skills.
I appreciate that. The difficulty is not everyone else is self-aware. And I'm not better. Like, I'm not superior. This doesn't come from a space of like serving my own ego. Mm-hmm. I could give a shit about my own ego. Like, I could care less about accolades. Like, everyone likes being acknowledged, right? And like, acknowledge when they're doing a good job. We enjoy that. And that's okay. That's okay too. Like, for a long time, I didn't want to celebrate my own birthday. Like, I didn't want to celebrate like, oh, I, you know, passed the bar exam. I didn't want to celebrate like even this thing like newfangled. Like, it's this cool, awesome thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like, that's okay to want to be acknowledged, but it doesn't have to like serve your ego. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of like my self-awareness, this was a choice, right? I wanted to live my own fucking life. I didn't want to live someone else's life. I didn't want to consume another life. Krista Tippett, she's a host of a podcast called On Being, and I just read her book, and it was amazing. And one of the very simple like tenets she espouses and lives by is what we practice, we become. And that's what I'm here for, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to live, you got to do it. You got to fucking live. Like, you got to get out of doom scrolling. You got to get out of feeling like you don't have time. You got to get out of saying, well, that's for someone else to do. Mm-hmm. Like, someone else can do these things. That's not for me. Like, my life is not designed for that. And you just got to go do it. This self-awareness comes from being in a marriage. Like, my wife is a yogi and is been very self-reflective. We hold a lot of space for being self-reflective. And that is honestly the greatest gift. Even like our kids, like, we don't say like, we'll numb that. You feel like crying? Like, cry. Mm-hmm. You want to get angry? Like, sometimes it's okay to be angry. And just bringing this level of, I guess, comfort to getting like kind of close with yourself, having a relationship with yourself, and not ignoring it. It's taken a lot of work. It's not easy. It's not like I woke up one day and was like, you know what? I have all these insights. No, not at all. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I hear you.
definitely not always easy, and sometimes, like, kind of, as we've said before, sometimes there's like a few dark nights of the soul, and you don't necessarily like what you see or what you're going through, but it's part of the process. But I love that you have that relationship with your wife. That's so beautiful how you can hold that space for each other in that way. And you mentioned doom scroll in there, that which reminded me something I want to talk about, and something I've noticed about you, which I love, is the fact that you don't have a smartphone. You don't have a smartphone at all, do you? Is it like, nope. What is it then, like an old school Nokia or?
Well, if I were only that cool. It's a company called Lightphone. Don't worry, it's not a paid advertisement, out of placement. Just calls and texts, no media, no anything. The screen is just a e-reader screen. So it's just like grayscale, nothing that gets you hooked. Right. I don't even know where it is sometimes. Honestly, I can't even tell you where it is. I think it's in my house somewhere.
Love that. The new puppy's eating it.
Yeah, right. It could be. One of the things too with having a smartphone is, what feeling do you get when it's at 5% battery life? And what do we call it? It's got a dead battery.
Wow.
Well, no wonder we all have anxiety. We're like experiencing these micro near micro losses all day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just 2 years ago stopped doing that, stopped drinking. I was like, the life I'm living is not the life I want. And how do you radically change that? You got to start with how you're spending your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that depressing thing you get from your phone that says how much time screen time you've done that week. And I was like, holy wow. Yeah. Like, this is way too much. I just like transitioned out of it. In the first like 2-3 weeks, what I realized is how in every transition moment I was looking at it, how you stop at a red light, you look at it. You're at the coffee shop waiting in line, you do it. You're on the airplane. The first thing when the plane lands is you turn it on and check it. And since then, oh my gosh. Like, this is why my relationship to like time and capacity, you know, like energy, it's like I've had the energy to like make my kids breakfast every morning. I bring my wife coffee in bed every morning. I was on a flight and I talked to the lady next to me on the flight, and it turns out like we knew some of the same people and like had lived some of the same places. It was absolutely nuts. You know, I now like when I go on a walk at night, right, I just like look up, or like I just watch the wind blow in the trees, right? I just like let thoughts come. These are all things we've been, I think, with technology, robbed of. We've traded convenience as our top value that trumps everything else. Like, everything has to be convenient. Even, like, my kids, like, my son, it'll be funny, like, here we can do, like, drive-up orders. Like, we just drive into the parking lot, and they bring you the stuff. Oh, and so when we have to physically go into the store, he's like, what's this? Like, dude, this is how it used to be. Like, we can go slow. Like, let our life be kombucha. Like, let it ferment. Like, not everything needs to be, like, right then and there. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a question. I was like, dude, like, we used to like have to get a book from the library, or like if you had an encyclopedia, like you had to go look it up.
Yeah.
And just like hold up. So I've even been like, hey, we're not gonna look that up right now. Like, I'm not gonna just go Google this question you have.
Love,
because we need to slow down. Not everything needs to be immediate. Not everything needs to be convenient. I think that's why we're all tired. We're all just feel like we have to do the next task and we have to do it now. And the second you have the thought, you got to go do it. You rob yourself of the fifth iteration of that thought, the 15th iteration, the 50th. Immediacy can't be the only thing.
Totally.
You know, there's some amount of benefit. I think a lot of benefit of sometimes letting things percolate. Letting things chill out. We've discounted these. skills. We've discounted these ways of being. This is why now they're being packaged and sold, right? Look at LinkedIn. Come on this retreat where you're going to learn how to basically just exist. It's like, you know, like I'm here for like the anti-productivity hacks.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, here's how to nap. Maybe that'll be my next thing. Like,
yes.
I'm gonna start coaching business. Here's how to nap as attorneys. Like, I'm gonna take a 2 p.m. Power nap. Let's do this.
Right? Love that. And I think one thing I've noticed, I love all of those shares and yeah, so many deep insights. One thing I've noticed is like, even though you don't have a smartphone, to me, you're really like visible and still active on LinkedIn. And I know like this is me still looking at this through a certain lens. Like one might assume, well, you're living as a monk in the mountains, but it's like you still engage in the quote unquote real world, whatever that is. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't mean you then are 100% disconnected from that world. You're more connected to your real world as well.
Yeah, it's a balance, right?
And I imagine you're more efficient and productive when you're on LinkedIn. If you have to log in on your browser and you're not, like, if I think about the journey on my phone, I might be looking about to go on LinkedIn, a notification pops up from something else, or I don't know, there's just different directions that it could go in.
Yeah, it's very much so. I think I'm going to go back to the theme before.
Okay, yeah.
Of escapism. LinkedIn can be another form of escapism. At the end of the day, it's social media. And so... yes, I have to be very intentional. But I've even found at times one of the things I've contemplated is like just doing a 90-day sabbatical from everything. Like 90 days. Like the difficulty in that is a practical. Once again, I'm going to go back to the practical. Is I would love to just disconnect from literally everything for 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Same. Work. Everything. Just unplug. Just pull it out and see what life is. For 90 days of just doing whatever I want and just wandering around and going to chop wood and making things out of clay and writing and playing with my kids and not having to worry about anything else, anything external.
Mm-hmm.
What would that get me? Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to do that in like micro ways because it's a mindset. It's, I think, really what I've come to is it's your relationship to the thing itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how do you use LinkedIn? How do you use any form of social media? How do you use technology in general? Is it a tool or is it a distraction?
Mm.
We've been told, right, sold almost, that these things are tools. They're all tools. They all have utility,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that true? Have we just accepted it? Like, somehow, is LinkedIn actually a better tool than Facebook? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It's an ongoing process, right? You know, even with all of this, I guess, these changes I've made, you know, you still fall prey to checking your email too much,
mm-hmm.
checking LinkedIn too much, like being pulled back. So I'm actually going to another radical step is I'm going to start working out in an office and keeping everything there. So when I'm at home, I don't even have the option because I don't want it.
Love that. Old school. Yeah. That's how it used to be. Like when I started my training contract, like I feel like I've lived these two worlds. That's how it was. Like things were left in the office.
Yeah. Work from home and like remote working is now, once again, the convenience trumps all. Every other value is, well, it's convenient. And it's like, well, what if it were inconvenient? Like what if my work were the most inconvenient thing? Then when I'm there, I have to be more strategic, right? I have to be more intentional. I have to be better at prioritizing, about creating boundaries. It actually creates more creativity because there's more restrictions.
Mm.
And so the next experiment I'm going to go through is basically physically locking myself out of it completely unless I'm physically with it. And if I'm not physically with it, then it's going to create more creativity, more... one of those things, right? More restrictions, more parameters creates more creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm forcing that upon myself. to see what happens.
Cool. Well, I really want to hear how it goes. I love like people experimenting with different working ways and stuff, and to see if it like helps you with creativity and productivity and presence. And yeah, I love that. And I'm also here for Newfangled Lawyer Unplugged, like your 90 days unplugged. That's going to be like
that. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna happen. I think maybe not 90 days, but for sure, like my podcast is coming to the end of season two. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a natural thing, and just embracing kind of these natural pauses in your life and not trying to fill it again.
Yeah. Or jump onto the next thing, restart the next season ASAP.
I've already done that. Time to pause.
Yeah. Well, I've just had a 2-year pause on my podcast. Like, I'm bringing it back every 2 years. So take that as your permission slip, Patrick.
Signed, cool. Sealed, delivered.
Cool, fab. Oh, so many juicy things we've chatted about there, and pieces that were amazing food for thought within that. I'd love to now dig into your human design and give you a bit of a mini reading of your human design chart.
Let's do it.
Cool. So I'll start with your human design type. So we've already chatted about this, but you're a manifester in human design, and that's a very rare type. So there's 5 types, and manifestors are only about 7 to 9% of the population. And I've probably only come across, a handful of lawyers who are manifestors. So they are really, really unique. And manifestors are the fire starters, kind of like what I said earlier. They're like where they're really potently placed is in starting things. They don't necessarily have the energy or the desire to see things through to the end. And that's a good thing. Like society might tell us, don't quit, or you must see things through. Your power is in starting, initiating things. And often they are quite the pioneers. They're the ones over time who have initiated new movements. Like they have like caused ripple effects. The things they've seen, the things they've started new trends, ripple effects, and new ways of working and being. So manifestors, very, very powerful. The other cool thing I'll share about them is that a couple of things is in human design, like human design acknowledges that we all have an aura, like an energetic field around us. And the manifestor aura probably doesn't have the most desirable name compared to the rest. It's called a repelling aura. And really what it is like the job of your repelling aura is kind of to help you move the things that don't serve you out of the way so you can get shit done. Like, because you're here to be different, because you're here to like start movements, be pioneering, like not everyone's going to be on board, and it probably will repel some people. But it's like the people who are like a hell yes are like a hell yes times 100. And the final piece I'll share is like you really work in surges. Like you're either at 200% or 20%. And again, that's cool. That's how you work. Embrace it. So being really mindful of your energy patterns. You're not necessarily someone who would optimally work like 9 to 5 consistently, but you might have like a mad 2 days where you're like, I'm so lit up and on fire and I've got these ideas and I need to bring them to life. And like you give it your all and then you rest for the rest of the week. Or it might be that your surge is a week or a month. I don't know, like these things change. But I'll take a pause there. Do you resonate with any of that?
Oh my, yeah. I mean, the issue that I've run into, because of course we're attorneys, we're going to go first to issue spotting, is that the world isn't designed this way, right? The world isn't designed to say, go do a creative sprint for 3 days and then take the next week off, right? That's not how the world's designed. A lot of professions are designed that way. This is why I tell people, like, I'd be a horrible employee. Like, I've tried it. Like, I'm a bad employee. That doesn't mean I'm not productive. That doesn't mean I'm not smart. That doesn't mean I don't provide value. But in the traditional sense of an employee, I'm not a good employee. And that's fine. Like, I've accepted that about myself, because the traditional way of doing it is, you're there 40 hours, right? Even in this new virtual way. Like, I've even looked at like some like companies that are hiring for virtual, right? Because I just like knowing what's out there. And it's like, our expectation is that you're available Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. You're like, wait a second. This is exactly this. This is just, yeah, you can do this whole job just from your house as if you were sitting in an office. So mm-hmm. if we reach out to you on Microsoft Teams at 10:30 a.m. on a Wednesday, you better be available. Mm-hmm. Right. And no, so this stuff resonates for me. It's what has been the major tension, but also creative outlet, is figuring out like how to practice law, right? Where there's requirements, right? There's deadlines. There's a court hearing on a time where I'm energetically at the rest period. And figuring out how to do that and navigating that has been the biggest challenge, particularly mm-hmm. recently, of figuring out like, okay, now that I've accepted, like, you can rest. There's still a court hearing. I still need to prepare mm-hmm. for it. mm-hmm. Like, how to rectify that has been a really important revelation mm-hmm. for me.
Mm-hmm. And something you touched on there about saying you're a bad employee, a key thing about manifestors is they need freedom. They are not here to be told what to do, to be micromanaged, or they don't even enjoy micromanaging other people. Like, freedom is at the key, at the core. And so it's like having enough freedom to do it in your own way. And I hear you as well, like, being in the legal world, there's still like deadlines, there's still things that happen. I think a few lawyers I know who are manifestors kind of either work as consultants, where they like pick and choose projects and matters and cases, but yet there's still an extent where they might be pulled in a different direction where it doesn't suit them, or they become business owners where they're doing more of the managing and less of the doing. But yeah, it's interesting. And I think we're on the edge of even more change in law, where eventually they will take into account more of these things, but it's still very early stages. So some other cool things, you have your profile in human design. So this is the thing, the numbers that look like a fraction. You're a 5-1. So the 5, it's very cool combined with the manifestor actually, but you're like very practical, you're solutions driven. You're here for the people, but not in like a hand-holding way. You're kind of like at a network event, you might like prefer to be a bit more standoffish, for example, or like leave at a particular time. But you are here for the people. You're just not here to like hold people's hands all the time, if that makes sense. And the 1 is called the investigator, and they're really here for like depth. They like learn by, they love books. They love learning in more traditional ways, generally, and like a very investigative, they can smell BS when it's around. Do you connect with that?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's even like in my own practice, so I do bankruptcy work. Mm. I don't do a lot of hand holding. That's probably why my paralegal is good, because that's more of her. Mm-hmm. So it's a good combination. You need some amount of that, but my whole thing is I'm here to guide you and not enable you, right? Like, what got you here could have been some amount of like enabling behavior, manipulative behavior, codependency. Like, I'm not here for that. Mm-hmm. The networking, it's really fascinating. So as an introvert, right, I historically was very introverted and pretty shy. But I'm social, have a tendency to kind of sit back and try to find someone I know. Mm. Like, I was just at a thing on Friday, and that's what I did. Like, I waited till I saw someone I knew. The deep learning. I also like deep conversations. I don't like small talk. I don't, if I'm going to like learn something, it's got to be something I care about. So like some of even like self-help, like, you know, books right now, like some hot books, right? Like Atomic Habits, hot book right now. I started reading it and I was like, this doesn't do anything for me. Abandon. And that's how I've always been. Always.
Love that. And then your authority in human design. So authority is your primary decision-making tool. It's called splenic, which is basically your intuition. So your intuition is like a potent decision-making tool for you. So really listening to kind of that bodily intelligence, that inner whisper, that like message that doesn't always make sense. But when you trust it, maybe different things unfold and you realize, it was leading me somewhere, or where you don't listen to it and it's like, damn, I should have followed that.
All the time.
But yeah, often it's like just an inner whisper. It's not as loud or potent as like another authority is like the gut. That tends to be a lot louder, but like this splenic the splenic authority is like a little whisper. Do you connect with that?
Yeah, it's like a small nudge. It can be nagging too. And when I don't follow it, it always burns me. Always. Not sometimes. Always. And this is why, even let's say with like writing, I'm not good at legal writing, right? Because that's based upon facts and applying like, you know, legal precedent to facts. Where I'm more like, this just doesn't feel right. This is the way it feels, right? And there's some amount of that in legal writing, right? In terms of how you talk about the facts, right? Like in the narrative. This is why I'm really good at creative writing, right? You're just feeling like this feels right. I don't have to go find facts. I don't have to go find a research paper to support what I'm saying here, these ideas. And people too. I can just like read a room. Like I can sense someone's bullshitting me. I can sense when someone's being genuine. I can sense when like a person and I will jive or not really quickly. I like almost instantly sometimes when I haven't trusted that intuition of like, this just doesn't feel right. But it should, right? Like, this should work, right? Mm-hmm. From like outward appearances, or someone's like, hey, you should get to know this person, and you meet them, and you're like, no, I shouldn't. Like, it was fine, surface level. Like, yeah, I met you once. That's fine. Move on. And yeah, that can be a tough thing sometimes, because all I have to go of is like, this feels right. This feels wrong. And feeling sometimes pressure, worried, like I don't have anything to back that up. Like if there's another question, like, well, why do you feel that way? I don't know. Like, and that's straight up. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I can't explain it. Yeah. I have nothing to go off of here other than just the way it feels.
I have this authority as well. And I totally relate on that. It's like, and I don't always want to back it up. Like, just listen. I know this is the truth. I know this is the right direction or whatever. Yeah. And another phrase I've started using when I'm like acting on these things is like, I sense that. I sense, because that's like kind of deeply connected with that feeling. I sense that the right way to go is X. I sense that. Yeah. Fab. Oh, it's hard to choose what else to talk about. you've got so many cool gifts that are just looking at me.
Just keep going. Just keep going. And there's no right or wrong. This is just the first of many conversations. Yeah, or second, true. Really, of many conversations.
True.
So, I mean, there's no, you know, it's one of the things about the manifestor that I saw that really resonated with me was your environment in which you create or work. And I've been thinking about this very seriously over the last, I would say, 6 months, because I work from home, right? Home's not a very creative, it can be, but it's not a very inspiring place for me. Maybe for others it is. Part of the discussion of where you work that I've seen missing, and you know, right, Nike's CEO just comes out and is like, people need to come back to the office because we're not being innovative enough. That's a missed point. It's the space that you occupy. Has it been supported to be inspiring? Has it been created in a way that facilitates true creativity and innovation? Do some people need that? Do some people need creative space that has murals on the walls and vibrancy and a lot of activity to innovate, to collaborate, to be creative? And some people don't. It's a missed opportunity because it's not nuanced enough. It's not individualized enough to just say, everyone come back. Well, there's that brilliant introverted innovator who you're going to make come back to the office, and that's going to actually stifle their creative juices, their innovation, their ability to contribute their top value to their team, to your company, to themselves, to their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've really been fascinated by this idea of like the space in which you occupy, physical space, the mental space, to unlock kind of like the best version of you from a professional standpoint, a personal standpoint, and what is your role in the team? Let's just say your role does not really require innovation or creation. Like, mm-hmm. what? And so for a manifester, seeing that, it was really important to be in like this kind of inspiring creative hub.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not at home. I need to seek that elsewhere. And I had been feeling this pull, right? This pull to be in like this kind of space. And so I have found that. And so it kind of pairs with these kind of other, I guess, integrations that I'm going for, of like having a physically separate place, being able to separate myself from work. You know, and then when I'm there, right, when I'm physically at this space, that's going to be, because it's being built right now, like creative, inspiring. That's the whole goal of these physical
like
spaces.
Like a co-working space, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a co-working space. Their whole bent is creating like a community of innovators and change makers.
Cool.
And the owners of this particular location, one's an attorney. And one is a yoga teacher.
Awesome. Wow.
So it's like, the universe is like, here you go. Right in front of you. It's like,
yeah.
It's so right in front of my face. It like hit me upside the head.
Yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm. I love what you shared there. And I am too, so passionate about this relationship between where we work and our impact of our space. Like ever since the first time I went and worked from Bali in 2017, I didn't even know what a co-working space was until then. And suddenly I'm in these spaces with cool artwork on the walls and interesting people. And that just flipped everything on its head ever since. And I've kind of been experimenting with different working ways since and like bringing snippets that into my own home and observing when I'm more productive or creative. But, and it's cool you resonate and like felt that sort of your bodily intelligence was pulling you to that anyway, because of the manifestor piece. But there's a few other things in the human design chart I usually look to about the environment. So shall I just like point out a few things and see if you connect, because it's a cool kind of conversation, a nice link. So one thing I do look to are like the head centers. So in your chart, there's like two triangle shapes, and yours are white, they're open. And I have these open as well, like you. And generally, people with like, if there's this white, not colored here, really thrive on being in spaces where it's a bit more dynamic. So cafes, co-working spaces, they usually appreciate beautiful or creative spaces, and they tend to need that sort of input to help generate their own ideas or channel their creativity, channel their productivity. So that's one thing, and that really stood out to me. And the other thing is your emotional center, which is a large triangle at the bottom of the chart, is open, which tells me you're an empath. So you absorb the emotions of other people. Obviously, that's not directly correlated to environment in terms of where you work, but I love to link that because it's important to be mindful of the fact that being an empath is like a beautiful gift. Like you have this power to connect with other humans on this deep level, but sometimes we can take that on. So we need to be really mindful of the spaces we're in. Like what energy are you taking on? Like, are you just going to be in this like gray office around
maybe some dense energies or whatever's, you know, different environments, there could be different examples, but like that is so important, like where we are. And then the final piece that really speaks to sort of how and where you work is you, there's something called definition in human design, and yours is single definition, which means you're really, really independent when it comes to working. You don't need anyone to kind of plug your gaps. You just kind of like the manifestor piece, a powerhouse, a pioneer, you've got your own thing. But because of those head centers, like creative input will be helpful for you, like not necessarily in an office where you might get bothered by people or other people will need you, but where you can be in a creative space, be it solo doing your thing and get creative input as and when you kind of want. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's why you're going to like this. So one of the visions I have is at a certain point, you know, if I continue on this path of owning a law firm, is a physical space that is not a traditional law office. That you basically go into and it's like we have a barista, like we have a yoga room, like we have, it's more of like a community space, a creative hub. You know, that one of the things we provide is obviously legal services. And I've been kind of playing around with this, right? This idea that, you know, how you design the space to reflect you is so important. And filling it not with other attorneys. This is the other thing, is that I think there's this attorney here in the US, his name's Vivek Jayaram. He does represents like, his law firm represents like artists. So they have designed their law offices now to have like an artist in residence. How cool is that?
Wow, right? So like, cool. They don't,
I mean,
love that.
Right? It's like, how, you know, that's one now creative iteration, right? Of really just accepting, you know, this is the space in which I thrive. And then you build out a team, right? That's not necessarily everyone has to look the same, but who also thrives in that kind of environment. As opposed to saying, hey, we're going to look like a traditional law firm, because I think that's what people would expect, but I don't work best there. And then I'm going to attract people that work best at a traditional type law firm physical space or environment, and then expect a different outcome.
Love that idea. Yes. Yes. Bring that to life. Love it.
Someday.
Yeah. Fab. Right. I'm going to choose one more because I'm conscious of time. Okay, so one, there's like four gifts in your human design chart that make up your purpose. And one of these gifts is called the Gate of Doubt. There's some funny names in human design, but it's number 63 in the top center. And really, this is someone who, and we've kind of touched on it, but this is like a different angle. Someone who is, yeah, you kind of doubt a lot, but you question things. It's like, you don't just take things at face value, you question them. So you're usually the person who has a lot of questions and like look into things in a lot of depth. And again, like it's good at kind of filtering out any bullshit. The one thing I will say is, because there's like a gift to everything and a potential shadow, is like number one, overanalyzing and questioning things too much, like, and also internalizing it, like turning on yourself and like questioning yourself. Like this gift is really to be for the outside and to see more depth and to get to the truth or one of many truths in a situation. Do you connect with that?
I mean, yes. And I think, you know, you can turn that inward, you know, and having self-doubt can be paralyzing, right? And this is one of the, I guess, main drivers of Newfangled is, you know, turning that outward and like, you know, where are the different avenues where there are opportunities for change, for a new way of thinking. I don't have to be my own barrier. I, like, my wife just told me, like, you need to bet on yourself. Like, stop thinking so much about, just go do it. Like go discover and be curious and get out of your own way. Self-doubt, self-criticism, any of those things, you're going to go through periods of it. But it's about just like having confidence and also knowing, like, when you're going out there in the world, yeah, you can't take things as they are. Like someone just saying, like, the legal profession sucks, right? You could just take that as a self-evident truth. Like, yeah, everyone believes it. It must be true. Or, hey, we've always done something this way. I never, ever buy that. I never have. I'm like, why do it? The downside of having this kind of skill is what something I've gone through recently is kind of, I equate it to like this. I really like going around and smashing boxes, like paradigm boxes, and being like, why do we need a box? What if instead we have murals? Like, what if instead we have mosaics? What if instead we have stained glass windows? And what can end up happening is when you have self-doubt and all the other things, right? You like pick it up, this box, and you're like observing it and you're figuring out how to deconstruct to reconstruct. Mm-hmm. I have to balance that with the fact that sometimes with my personality, I'll just go around and smash a bunch of boxes or just observe them, smash them. And then I'm like, well, I moved on. And it's like, no, like now you like put that box, like somebody needs to put that box back together because that's like a necessary component. It doesn't have to look like a box anymore, but it has to turn into the next thing. That's kind of my recent, I guess, aha moment, was kind of in this exploratory, newfangled, kind of expedition, is you have to do more than just observe and break. There's also a building aspect too. You can be the architect, but you have to get there. You can't just go around breaking things. There's a power to that, right? Mm-hmm. But, and some things just need to be broken and not, I guess, put back together at all, right? They need to be left behind, but that can't be true for everything. And it's, once again, one of those things that what applies for one thing doesn't have to apply to everything. It doesn't have to be these extremes. Mm-hmm. There's balance there.
Well, love that. What I take from that is if we're thinking about pioneering lawyers in particular who see things that aren't working, like it's not just about breaking down the things that are not working, like, and just disrupting in that way. It's like, be intentional. What can we rebuild? What can we recreate? What's your vision? Yes, there's a lot of shitty things that exist, but what are you here to kind of recreate and build? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Fab. Okay. So I'm going to move on to the closing questions and ask you two questions that I ask every guest to wrap things up. So, Patrick, what makes you legally different?
God, where do I start? How long do we have? We've already talked for a while. I just how I am, and I really had, have come to terms with that and accepted that. I don't need to do anything more except just, I don't need to try any harder. Mm-hmm. I just need to, or want to be myself. I mean, just me in the way in which I navigate being an attorney is in and of itself legally different. I don't have to put any more pressure on myself to kind of what we just talked about, like redevelop that, redefine that, recreate that. Mm-hmm. Just be.
Love that. Mic drop. What makes you legally different? Who I am. Yes to that. Yep. And what advice would you give to a younger Patrick? One piece of advice, if you could go and have a chat with him, what would you say? Hey, mate, listen up.
Mm-mm. Life is a confluence. Your journey is many journeys. And at times it doesn't make any sense at all. You're going to try things and it sucks. You're going to try things and it doesn't suck. But spend less time trying to categorize things as good or bad. A success, a failure. They're all just part of the experience. It just is. And it all flows through to the same endpoint. And practically, don't care so much. Like, let go. My mom just told me, which is really fascinating because I never thought my mom had this kind of perspective. She's like, the greatest thing I would tell my kids now, like this stage of my life, is like, don't worry so much. And I was historically a big worrier. So yeah, I would say the same thing too. Like, don't worry, just like enjoy the experience. Float a bit. Like, don't feel anything other than kind of a neutral acceptance of, this is your life. Take control of it. I think those things would have helped me a lot, just to have understanding. I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't say, like, don't become an attorney, right? I think there's this tendency to go back and like change some aspect of your journey, and there's some amount of attractiveness of doing that. Like, go back in time, like it's Back to the Future, and say, like, don't do this. Instead, accept it. And so that's what I would say. Just accept it. Like, this is your journey, and that's okay.
And that's part of the journey, the lessons. Yeah, love that. Well, thanks so much, Patrick. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you. We got into so many different things there, and I could just absolutely keep recalling, but there
Yeah.
needs to be an end time. Thank you
I
so much.
my joy. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in. I really enjoyed that conversation with Patrick. I hope you enjoyed listening to it too. I really appreciated his depth and his humanness. And as always, I'd love to hear your takeaways. What did you find most interesting out of the things that we chatted about? Yeah, I'd love to hear, so feel free to share. I think my biggest takeaway was observing Patrick's devotion to questioning the status quo, to exploring his true self, to peeling back conditioned layers in order to be his truest, realest self, aka the newfangled lawyer, and how much he experiments in his own life in real terms with different things. Yeah, I found that really, really inspiring, and also just a huge permission slip to be the newfangled lawyer, to be your truest self. So thanks so much for that, Patrick. And I think his authenticity really shines through as a result, and hopefully you can hear and feel that in the conversation. If you would love to understand your own unique blueprint for success, your own truest self, how you are designed to optimally work, create opportunities, and so much more, I'd really encourage you to explore your own human design if you haven't already. It's my favorite tool for self-awareness and self-empowerment. You can look up your chart on my website. It's linked in the show notes. And if you want to go further, a really cool way to do that is via the signature session, which is a one-on-one session with me where I basically do a 360 review of your human design chart, focusing on your unique strengths, gifts, optimal ways of working, and so much more. And because you've listened this far, there is a discount code to say thank you, Legally Different 10, which you can use at the checkout for 10% off. Thanks so much for listening, and see you on the next one.